This is CliffCentral.com.
Hello to you and goodbye to March, almost.
Oh, what?
Yeah, like I was working,
okay.
Been working really hard of late. I looked at the calendar. It's like, well, that's fantastic.
Bye-bye, March. It's this phenomenon called the ending of the month.
No, we're flying into that really great Easter season where we can all eat Easter bunnies and other things. Do you ever get, like, psyched out by the fact that at Christmas you eat, like, Santa and you eat the Easter bunny? You get people who are really upset about that kind of stuff.
You don't eat Santa at Christmas as much as you do eat the Easter Bunny at Easter. I mean, like, you will eat the occasional chocolate Santa, but it's not a festival of eating Santa.
Yes.
It's more about roasting animals and that kind of thing.
Roasting
animals. I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm just saying it's, like, not a main characteristic of Christmas, whereas in Easter, you do eat the fuck out of the Easter Bunny. Excuse me for swearing so early.
So true. Like, you don't go on a Santa hunt.
No.
Which would actually be kind of cool, though.
And I mean, it's the most bizarre thing because, and I'm not like knocking it, it's good fun for the kids and none of this shit's about religion anyway, but like Easter is so far off, you know, the whole religious foundation of it. It's like the pagan festival of Esther, the rabbit goddess of fertility and eggs and little chickens and rabbits being her symbols from like old pagan religions. And then because the O's were celebrating that anyway, when the Romans were conquering them, they were like, well, shit, we've got a Christian thing around about this time as well. So we'll celebrate the Christian Jewel and you can still eat your chickens and bunny meat. And like centuries later, it's chocolate eggs at Woolworths.
Which sounds so much nicer. See, this is even more evidence that we've really come on nicely as human beings.
Yeah.
But speaking of Rome, just finally got through season 2 of the show Rome.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so good.
Is it?
And then this is the worst thing about being involved in a show is that when you, like, the show's happened a while ago and then you caught on to it late and you watch it, you go, this is so great.
I've never even heard of Rome. I just had to Google it right now.
I just remember there's a, like, the main oak in it is super handsome, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, he's dashingly handsome.
If there's one reason you should watch Rome, it's half-naked men with six-packs and just bulging.
The red-headed-looking dude?
That's more Spartacus.
Yeah, I was going to say Spartacus was like the most homoerotic thing, but the first season...
No, not homoerotic, just aesthetically pleasing.
Just erotic.
Just watch the men.
Yeah, but like Spartacus was like... One, you remember things like back in the day, there was like Red Shoe Diaries on Mnet, and you'd stay up late on a Friday night to watch. It was like, it was
okay. You have lost Sia. He's leaving the room. You've lost him.
Decades before Sia was born, like on Mnet, they started loosening the censorship, and like late on a Friday night, they would show these like soap opera things that were like on the borderline of risque. And
always like smutty saxophone in the background.
Yeah, and like a couple of nipple scenes in it, and it was mad controversial. So like,
it was so overly saturated. Every scene, the nipples were like blood red.
Spartacus was like a very cool show, and the action sequel, it got crap after like 2 seasons, but it was a very cool show.
Spartacus was amazing till the very end.
I didn't feel it so much once they changed the lead actor because the guy died.
Yeah,
but that aside,
made it even more monumental.
The point that I'm making is that it was like a great story, but an unnecessary amount of the dialogue and like the just like the dudes discussing their plan was like butt naked in a sauna.
Yeah,
like there was that element of lots of naked men that if it offended you, well, that's your problem, but. I didn't watch it for that, but I can see how that was the appeal for a lot of other people.
But you can see how that show started out. They were like, okay, look, we got some money, a couple of guys who people know have signed on, but we're not sure if this is going to last. So let's just make sure we get loads of violence, loads of nudity, loads of sex.
Yeah.
That'll grab people.
There was a lot of wrestling.
And then they were like, hang on a sec, we've actually got a really good show here. We don't actually need to be so like over the top Red Shoe Diary about it. And then eventually, but Rome, okay, so Rome, you can see where it starts out, doesn't have as much money. and therefore you don't have any battle scenes. Most of the stuff's done in like houses, and there's a lot of politics and deceit and all that kind of stuff. But then the show gets like so good. Like, it's a bit slow, and you've watched 8 episodes, and you're like, what's going on here? But it's still so good, even though not a lot's happening. And then you get to season 2, because season 1 gets really good, and then it ties in like Cleopatra, and then there's Mark Anthony, and obviously Julius Caesar, then Julius gets killed, and then there's Brutus. And it's all coming together so beautifully, intertwined with like these women who just hate each other.
Yeah.
And then season 2 is even better, and then the show got cancelled.
Yeah, like, a lot of shows are like that. Like I remember there was a really brilliant comedy series called Better Off Ted. It was one of the coolest things I ever watched, yeah. And it just ended. So is it quite historically accurate, this Rome business that you speak of?
Well, like with all these historical things, you always watch it and you're Googling stuff at the same time. A lot of it is, but obviously they have that creative license to say, okay, well, you killed yourself. Would it be better if that person killed you for the story?
Well, you're saying with all of these things, you sit there and you're Googling it for historical accuracy. That's not a lot of people. That's like you, I do that with Vikings and shows like that. But I think a lot of people watch that historical stuff and look at it and go like, oh, right. So this is like the affair. This is the conversation that these two historical guys had on the badminton court or whatever in the 1700s.
It's like at one stage in Rome season 2, Mark Anthony is shouting at his manservant because the lines that he got him can't pull the chariot in a uniform enough sense.
Oh, right. Because
his lines are obviously pack animals that can be chariot pullers too.
Yes.
And they're having this outlandish conversation about that. So it was actually quite sad. Like, obviously, it all these things get pulled for budget reasons, unless they're completely shite. But this one was a good series. And then, end of season 2. Bam, gone.
I also did a thing where, first of all, hi, my buddy.
What?
Hello.
We've spoken to each other. What's wrong with you?
I'm just like, you just kind of walked in and I didn't say hello. So oh,
okay.
I felt rude.
All right, okay. Hello, God.
How are you?
I'm good.
I haven't seen you in a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
We'll get that in a sec, God. Anyway, you're saying.
I got, you know, like in terms of going back and watching old things that everybody's seen that you haven't seen for a couple of years. And that you feel that you need to like catch up. Yeah. I watched the first, I think, 3 or 4 episodes of Hannibal. And I thought it was utter garbage. It was just so utterly far-fetched, I couldn't even suspend my disbelief. Like, the plot lines were ridiculous.
Yeah, but that was one of those shows that people felt they needed to like because of the movies.
Yeah. And I thought it was beautifully art-directed. I thought it was, you know, the cast were very sort of well-selected, but the storyline was like, and everybody loves it, and it's just crap. Okay. So that was disappointing as.
All right, well, we've got a special call. Debbie from Washington.
Hey, can you hear me?
Loud and very clear. Hi, Debbie. How are you today?
I'm fine. How are you? How's everything going?
Yeah, pretty good. Having a look around. Everything's kind of normal. I've got my buddy here. I've got Gordon. He comes in on a Wednesday. He's a lovely chap. And then Sia, he's there.
Hey, I don't think I've met him.
How are you?
I'm fine. I'm hanging in there. I am doing fantastic.
So, Debbie, we often chat to you on the show. Of course, this is Ben, not Gareth. I don't know where he is, but...
I know. I know you, Ben.
But, Debbie, you've just been invited to the White House. Now, Sia told me this yesterday, and I wasn't quite sure what to make of the story. If you were going there on a quarterly visit, or you were going there to kind of mess shit up, which one was it?
Well, you know me. I'm a big shit disturber, but this was hysterical because... you all know how I feel about President Trump.
Exactly, that's why I heard it. I love.
People just 45 because they don't even want to say President Trump. And so I think God has a great sense of humor because I've always said if I'm ever going to get into the White House, it would be with one of my Republican friends because I don't really have any Democratic friends that are, you know, in the administration or really politically connected. So. I was asked to go last Thursday night, and, you know, I had to say I'd be on my best behavior and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, it's on my bucket list.
Sure.
I've been to the White House, but only on a tour, you know, like the West Wing many years ago. So this was on my bucket list to be officially invited. And so it wasn't a state dinner. It was a reception, and it was for Greek Independence Day. I didn't care what it was for. I was so excited. So now a lot of my friends think that I sold out, but you know what? It's the people's house, and it was really a lovely experience. But now, and Trump did show up. So I had to bite my tongue. I had to listen politely. But it was cool. It was very, very cool. A lovely, lovely evening.
Okay, there
and I did behave.
Let's just rewind a little bit. Okay, so is there a certain sort of like set of forms you need to sign, as in like you won't steal anything, you won't deface any property, you won't say any certain words? I mean, like, what's the protocol before you even get to the point where you actually set foot on the property?
So they, you have to fill out a form, and you've got to do your social security number, your address, your phone, and the Secret Service vets you, and then you get something back after you've been investigated. And I'm sure they just put you through, you know, one of their super duper computers, and then they tell you where to show up and what time. And I mean, it's really quite interesting. You go through three or four security points. You're on a manual list. You're on a computer list. You go through quite a maze to even get into the White House. And at one point, you don't even realize when you're going to be there. And, I mean, it was cool. It was a great experience. Nobody really talked politics, except when Trump came out, somebody screamed, "Make America Great Again." And I wanted to barf, but I didn't. Yeah. And, you know, actually, I was really kind of looking forward. You know, my fantasy was not to meet Trump, but to meet Melania, give her a big hug and whisper sisterhood in her ear. Because, America's really feeling sorry for her right now. So, but, you know, the food was great. It was so beautifully done. If a foreigner came into our country and was at the White House, they would see how lovely, you know, how lovely it is, and it's America's house. And politics aside, it was really, other than Trump showing up, it was a lovely evening.
So you said you've been there on a tour before. So obviously, like, I've seen shows around the White House, and it's a very strange building. And they say it's like a bit of a maze to get in there. Did you get to go to areas that you hadn't been to before on the tour? And is it kind of like, do you know where Trump's room is? Like, do you know where the Oval Office is when you're in the building?
So, I mean, that's the West Wing, and we were in another section. I had been to the residence tour before, not, you know, where exactly that they live. And you get to go through those rooms, but you're escorted. This was really cool because, and you know, there was probably maybe 250 people there, which sounds like a lot, but in this massive house, it was really rather quite intimate because you weren't on top of everybody. You could go into each individual room and sit down and eat or have a drink. There was like two or three open bars. What was so unique about it is that you could sit in all these rooms. They weren't roped off. And we had the reception where the state dining room would be. And, you know, when you see it like on TV, it looks really huge. And it's really not. There's not a lot of people that can get in there. Maybe I wouldn't even say a sit down dinner. You could have maybe 60, maybe 100 people. But it was lovely. And what I got such a kick out of, to try to make it more interesting for me, you know, I'm a military wife, I'm a military brat, and so there was a lot of military aides there, and, you know, all the Air Force people, I was like, go Air Force, and Army, Navy, Coast Guard. So I went up to the women, I said girl power, got my photo with them, asked about their backgrounds, how they got there. I talked to all the servers. Some had been there 20 years, some barely spoke English. I was dying to ask them some questions, but of course I couldn't. But it was, you know, it was a great evening. It was lovely. Everybody was very gracious, and we didn't talk politics. It was cool.
I was about to ask you what sort of other people were there and what did you talk about, but you said a lot of kind of military background. I wanted to know, talked about the hectic process of getting inside. How long does that take from walking in the door to being able to go and schmooze at your leisure?
Yep. We had to be there by 4 so that they, and it was freezing out. And you know, my friend who who goes to the White House quite often. She knew this was on my bucket list. This is kind of like an early, I don't know, Christmas, birthday, whatever, Mother's Day gift. She said, let's get there right at 4. They said, then we could be the first people in. And from 4 o'clock, from the time, and we were, you know, we were probably 60 people back. So from 4 o'clock, it took about 45 minutes to get through. That's the security. Reasonable. And every time I thought we were done, there was another security line. But, you know, again, everyone was incredibly nice, very accommodating. They knew it was really an exciting, you know, time. Just very cool. But as for the military people, they're aides at the White House. So they have like these normal jobs, and then they do specific duties for the White House. They're all gorgeous, you know, they're all very well accomplished. And, you know, I mean, it's a good experience for them. And but those are the people kind of I sought out. A lot of Greeks. People came from all over the United States to be at this event. I'm sure they were top donors, you know, to the Trump administration and the Trump campaign. But nobody. Yeah, I mean, it was interesting. Other than that, somebody yelling out, "Make America great again." There was absolutely no politics. Everyone just really kind of absorbed that they were there, and they knew that it was very special. And I often, you know, I wondered how many Democrats were in the room, like me. So, no, but it was very cool. It was very, very cool.
Debbie,
I enjoyed it.
Your airport,
yeah, hey.
Your airports are probably the most invasive when it comes to security clearance and searches. How does the White House compare? Do you guys have to provide them with like a stool sample? How do they pat you down?
Absolutely. Listen, if they had really checked my background or looked at my Facebook, I probably wouldn't have been, you know, allowed. Think about going through our TSA and then compounded about 5 times. I didn't have to take off my shoes, but they had like some machines that I knew they could see everything that was, you know, inside me and outside of me. I went through that, I've never been through before.
That spinny thing that you have at the airports, I haven't encountered it anywhere else. I'm sure they have it in other places, but I've never encountered it anywhere else than in the States. That you walk into it and it's like a round room and everything starts to spin and you feel like at any moment you might be like beamed onto the USS Enterprise.
Exactly. You have to put your hands up. You have to cross your hands, put them up. And then like, so my husband's had a hip replacement. And he cannot use that machine. They've got to go and do something different with him, or he would, you know, all the sirens would go off. You know, actually, there wasn't a machine like that where you had to lift your hands up, but there was another machine where you just stood there, and then some guy did something, but it was, you know, like a big square, and then they said, okay, go through. And then I thought that was done, but I went through something else again, too. So it was interesting. By the time you got into the White House, you felt that you were probably in the safest place ever. A lot of security, a lot of Secret Service, a lot of people walking around that looked like guests, but I knew they weren't. Mm. It was interesting. But very, very cool. And just, you know, I took a photo with a bunch of military aides, and it was I didn't even realize it, but it was in front of the famous Kennedy painting where he's kind of looking down with his arms crossed. Mm-hmm. And then there's a room you go into that has all the first ladies and, you know, Jackie Kennedy and Pat Nixon. And, I didn't feel at all like I was a Democrat invading a Republican, you know, territory, because it's so sad because America's become so, you know, separatist. You're either a Republican or a Democrat, and everyone's kind of, you know, very suspicious. It was a gracious atmosphere. It wasn't us and them. It was, we all came together. I mean, I know I sound like kumbaya, and you know I'm not that way, but it was a lovely evening. And I'm just so glad, and I would, you know, I'd go again. Next time I want to meet Melania, so.
But you do make a good point, because it should be the nation's first house. And like, if you are a foreigner or if you are a dignitary or whatever, that should be your welcome. It should be like a neutral, fun place. But now in the room.
It really Yes. The sad thing, though, is that they're not even doing White House tours anymore. Oh, wow. I tried to get some of the, you know, we, you know, I'm very close to a lot of South Africans, and one of my friend's twin sons came over, and I tried to get him into the White House, and, you know, I do know people over there, and we couldn't do it. They're not doing a lot of the tours anymore, which is really sad.
Is that like a paranoia, like a safety kind of paranoia thing?
He is just a different sort, you know. I maybe a safety paranoia thing. You know, I mean, there's just such. You come back to reality the next day when you read the news and you think, oh, geez, I'm, you know, I was just at the White House. Everything was so cool, and then, you know, and then he pulls his crap again. So, you know, right now he thinks that the Pentagon or the military is going to pay for the wall. I mean, he doesn't even realize. Can't make that decision. It's got to be Congress. So it's just, it was two different worlds. It really was.
It just goes to show that all humans are capable of being nice for a certain moment, nice, cordial, and presentable.
And, you know, and I don't know if it's because, you know, it was a bunch of Greeks, and I think that it was in the spirit of people knowing that, you know, this is probably a once-in-a-lifetime thing for them, that, you know, a lot of the people didn't live here. They flew in. They probably will never be invited again. There were children there, and it was lovely. I mean, I kept on telling my friend Maria, "This is just lovely," and thank you so much. I mean, I've known her for years, and she's always been very politically connected. And you know, I mean, because of her, I've been to the Republican conventions, the Democratic conventions. I've been to inaugurals, and you know, at some point, I mean, we're Americans. We, you know, I'm ashamed. I'm, you know, saddened that we've become so bipartisan. But this was a lovely evening. And, you know, I thought I was going to have these great tales of people talking, but nobody did. It was just, I just kept on smiling, thinking God has a great sense of humor. You know, for me to be here, it was really something.
All right, Debbie.
So it was cool. It was very cool.
Thanks so much. We need to get to the news, but I'm sure you can tell Gareth a bit more of the story next time that you guys chat. And
I'll see you soon.
Is there anything else on the bucket list as far as this, on this, now that you got the White House out the way?
Lots and lots of things. I still need to bungee jump in Vic Falls, so that's next on the list.
All right. Cool, Debbie. Thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Take care, Ben. Bye-bye.
All right, ciao. All right, that was Debbie Troy, Gareth's friend from Washington, D.C. She got to see Trump, and you can just see how in awe she was.
Yeah.
And she behaved while seeing her favorite human.
Everyone behaved, but we must now get to the news, where people don't behave in stories that my buddy finds worthy of your ears in the morning.
Yes, let's begin with the five things you need to know. And our president yesterday strongly punted the idea of creating a single homogenous currency for the continent in a bid to attract infrastructure investment and enable ease of intra-African trade. He was speaking as a panelist on financing intra-Africa trade at the African Continental Free Trade Area Business Forum. It all went down in Kigali, Rwanda. And Ramaphosa said that it was time that Africa stops relying on foreign currency for its development and trade. And then our police, our police minister, Becky Cele's minister, ne? Commissioner?
Yeah. He's the minister? New minister.
Okay, there
the
you go.
The minister or the commissioner,
Somebody look it up. So he, you know, he's all about not wasting any time. There has been ongoing taxi violence in parts of the Eastern Cape, such as Mthatha and surrounding areas. And so his decision has been that he is going to close major taxi routes in those areas immediately and indefinitely. He's not wasting any time. Several interventions, including the signing of the peace accord, have been facilitated by the provincial government, all in an effort to try and bring peace to the rival associations. But seemingly that has not been working. So the minister has said, well, then that's it. I'm laying down the gauntlet. All major routes are going to be closed with immediate effect.
I'll go back, because he was brought in to be like this, right?
Well, I mean, he is the shoot to kill guy. You know, he doesn't strike me as the kind of guy who wants to sit down with you and have a conversation. He'd rather just like sort you out his way.
And also these taxis have become a law unto themselves anyway. So these kind of steps, unfortunately, need to be taken. It just means that the everyday South African who's always the one that loses out now is massively inconvenienced.
And yes, you are right. He's our new police minister. And look, I'm no Justice Malala. I'm not about to speak on a political stance. But I have to say, weirdly, the one thing that I like about Bekicele,
his hat.
Not even that. There's something about him that just reminds me of that uncle in the family who does not take any nonsense.
Yeah.
Like, you know, who stands up and will say, like, listen, why are you pregnant at 18? This is, like, stupid. Never. When, nah. Or at a family function, who says, why is the food late? Or why is the caterer not here? See, Peggy is making things happen. Look, doesn't care what happens with taxes. Says, damn it, man, closing the whole route.
Yeah. Look, he has his fans, and then he also has, you know, those people who say that, do we really need that sort in his position? Because, you know, shoot to kill, some people take an issue with
There's only so much reason you can do with unreasonable people, Mabali.
I'd far rather have a Bekicele than a police minister who's more fascinated by vanilla-scented candles, for example. I don't know.
What are you saying about Fikile?
No,
candles?
I'm not saying that's
that
what Fikile does,
thing.
But I'm just saying.
Celebrities were mostly his thing.
I'd rather have an overly, you know, rah-rah and shouty.
There's quite a difference between, like, rah-rah, shouty, being the one to call out the family catering, say the awkward thing about the pregnant niece, and shooting people with the intention to kill them.
Well,
the pregnant niece, there's
that
a step. It's a
I will admit that.
There's just a slight difference.
Yeah.
But, who's
like,
really
shoot to maim. I think, like, you know, go ahead and shoot, guys. That's quite hardline enough. You know, like, shoot to quell the problem, whatever it is, but to actually, with the intention of murder before.
Yeah.
Let's avoid trial here, guys.
Mm.
Let's save the state some money and some time and, like, not let this one get to trial.
Sure. The National Institute for Communicable Diseases is warning that the number of malaria cases is expected to rise in some of our provinces.
Oh, no.
This is due to an influx of travelers during the Easter holidays. Limpopo, Mpumalanga, and KZN, the warning is for you. This was revealed in a statement released yesterday, which said that another cause of the increase was the recent widespread rainfall across southern Africa. So, yeah, I don't know, just, like, you know, be warned, I suppose. And then South Africa's mortality rate has dropped, according to figures that were released by Stats SA yesterday. The numbers suggest
that's the number of people who are living goes down.
No, the South Africans, there are fewer South Africans dying on a yearly basis. Essentially,
okay.
All right.
That was my second guess.
Yes. Now, the majority of deaths occurring in the country are in the most populous provinces, no surprises here. 21% of deaths occurring in Gauteng, 19% in KZN, and then 14% in the Eastern Cape. More than half of deaths in 2016, that's just over 57%, were due to non-communicable diseases, with only 11% being due to injuries. TB is the leading cause of death among South African men, and diabetes is what's taking South African women out. Assault accounts for just 14.
Diabetes is the leading disease killer of
South African women.
Women,
and then TB for South African men.
Hell. And both of those are, like, quite treatable. If you obviously the more immune compromised you are, the less so. But on a regular day, under normal conditions, like, both of those diseases can generally be managed and treated fairly well.
And
the problem with TB is that there's, like, a long-term treatment thing for it, and you start on it, your symptoms go away, you feel better, you don't finish the 9-month medication course, and then, like, months later it comes back as bad or worse.
Yeah.
It's a bummer.
And then the problem with diabetes is, you know, some of the time it's very much self-imposed because of diet and just, like, general, like, abandon of your health.
Mm.
So you're right. These two are absolutely treatable. Assault only accounts for 14% of non-natural deaths. Transport accidents, just 12%. So, more than anything, we're killing ourselves more than, you know,
through bad lifestyle choices.
Yeah, through bad lifestyle choices than being assaulted or crime or accidents
or
accidents on the road. Yes.
Well, I've got to say, diabetes could be a crime for yourself then.
That's, yeah, well, arguably yes. Just
well, self-inflicted or not, most of the time with the right with access to the right medication, it's fairly manageable.
Yeah.
In some cases, not. But like I don't know the stats, but like 8 out of 10 cases are probably something you can live with your daily injection. It's a sad thing, the TB and the diabetes vibes, because it's curable.
And then lastly, everyone seems to be turning their back on cryptocurrency, especially because, well, they're just not doing so well right now. Twitter confirmed earlier this week that they're banning the advertising of cryptocurrency on its platform. And this is due to concern that the content is often related to deception and fraud. At least that's according to Twitter.
Oh, jeez.
But this is no new development. Facebook already banned cryptocurrency ads on their platform in January already. And Google say that they're now going to be doing the same starting from June.
That's what I loved about those ads, because clearly they took like 6-month contracts out. So it's booming in December. And it's like, you too can ride the wave of blah, blah, cryptocurrency. And then you see the same ad in February.
Yeah, and you're like,
It's like, yeah, what wave? They never changed the wording.
Those are the 5 things.
Speaking of which, Bitcoin is $7,841 currently. It is a bit down from yesterday. Ethereum's on $450 and goes continually towards the toilet. And as for the rest, well, leave that to Gareth. We must get into the sport. I know. That was a dramatic pause. Thank you very much. You felt bloody amateurs thinking like about a fill every second.
Oh, no, I just...
It's Ben Kapinski with your sport on CliffCentral.com.
So, Cricket Australia, a guy called James Sutherland, he's their CEO. He came into town like that... Like the bold sheriff dick swinging, I'm going to sort everything out. And then he got here and was like, whoa, shit, you guys did what? So yesterday there was this press conference for 7 o'clock right here in Sandton, South Africa, Johannesburg area. And everyone was going to be like, that's it, Smith's going to get banned, Warner's going to get banned, Bancroft's... This guy gets in there. Again, he's got this like quivering sort of disposition about him, which I find quite interesting. He gets in there. Firstly, he's late. He was like 15 minutes late, which obviously South Africans have never seen anyone late in their whole life. They were outraged. How dare him? How dare he come late for this thing? And he said very little. Very, very little, which is so odd because yesterday, wow, there was so much going around in the press. So yesterday I said to you that basically it was going to be 3 players that are looking to get banned, and Darren Lehman is very much out of a job. That's what I was picking up from general consensus around all the media. Darren Lehman, of course, is the coach. He's that dodgy bastard who I think is the root of all evil in this team. And it's not just me who says that. A majority of people say that.
Why is that? I mean, coming from a not completely ignorant but also not expert standpoint, why is that the case?
Good. Don't have enough time to get into what I said yesterday.
Okay.
Because I got a lot more to say today.
Cool.
I'm not dismissing you. We'll talk about this afterwards.
Don't worry, Ben. I appreciate that.
I'm sure you'll pick up
the gentle dismissal. We'll continue.
I'm sure you'll pick up a little bit about Dazza Lehman through this little monologue that I'm about to give you.
I'm excited.
Okay, great. So Dazza was like, no, mate, I have no idea what's going on. And then Warner apparently went rogue. So after the test match at Newlands, he removed himself from the players' WhatsApp group. Can you believe it?
He stormed out, in other words.
He stormed out of the players' WhatsApp group. I mean, this tour can just not get any spicier.
Why didn't somebody just put him back in? Because that's what some admins do. When you leave a WhatsApp group and they're like, what? No. I don't think so. They just put you back in.
And it's almost like one of those comedy clips you get them on like Facebook where it's like a parody WhatsApp group when a team's done badly. And like, it's almost like that in real life.
Yeah, I wish I had the technology to do that. It's a good question, Mubs. No one asked that yesterday at the press conference. But not only did he storm out of the WhatsApp group, he went drinking with people outside of the team.
Oh.
And he was drinking champagne with people who were not team members of Team Australia. And everyone was like, wow, this guy's just the pits. Then these pictures started circulating of him sitting around in the hotel lobby, no friends, basically by himself. Everybody wants him out of the team now. So what Steve Smith was saying was that, yeah, well, kind of everyone knew about it, so we were doing this. Then all the bowlers and everyone else were going, bullshit, we knew nothing about this, it's just you guys. And suddenly the bowlers were like, we're totally innocent, have no idea. So all of this starts to sound like absolute crap. So James Sutherland has not banned anybody yet. He says they really are going to assess the process and make a call on that. He then said Darren Lehman is still going to be the coach because he had no part in this whole thing. So that press conference yesterday was a whole pile of shit and it said nothing basically. But getting into what this actually means. It's the stupidity of it all. You're telling me those bowlers knew nothing about the ball doing something really irregular.
Mm.
As a bowler, all you hope for, you are so acutely aware of what the state of the ball is in, how it's reacting, and what your plan is. Because a bowler doesn't just run up and throw the ball towards the batter. He pitches it in a certain area, hoping for it to do a certain thing to get a certain kind of dismissal from the batsman. This is not under 9C, KFC mini cricket, whatever it is. This is test match cricket. These guys know exactly what's going on. So when a bowler is given a ball, and there's shine, and there's a bit of abrasion here and there, they know exactly what's going on because it's a team plan. When you're looking for a reverse swing, you bowl the ball in a certain way.
Yeah.
You have a certain feel set.
And there's an optimal, you know, kind of condition of the ball that,
exactly,
under normal circumstances, a degree of its luck. Like, obviously, your team is consistently shining one side of the ball,
yep,
but the condition of the other side is, to a degree, luck.
Sure.
So you hope, you would notice that, hey, I've been playing cricket my entire life, and I'm noticing that we seem to have really way better balls for reverse swing kind of all
that,
the time.
Yeah.
Also, I bowled 5 overs ago, and the ball was not nearly this rough on the one side. It almost seems unnatural.
So what these guys are doing when you bowl reverse swing is you're pitching the ball up a lot. So you don't just suddenly get into that without a plan. It's like certain batsmen aren't as good in the short ball, whatever it is. So the bowlers completely knew all about this. You can't tell me for a second that they thought it was a lovely coincidence. And then Darren Lehman, I've got to play this clip for you because how incriminating is this? This is what this horrible individual said in Durban around reverse swing.
Obviously, there's techniques used by both sides to get the ball reversed, and that's just the way the game goes. I have no problems with it. Simple.
Do you think they techniques that are acceptable to the ICC and the triple?
I don't know. You'd have to ask the umpires in the ICC that one.
You'd know about it.
How casual did that guy just say that cheating might happen, but he's kind of, yeah, well, it's not his thing? This isn't the first test. The first test saw reverse swing like we've never seen in this country before.
Mm.
We use the same balls, we play in the same conditions, and the same weather, the same pitches, basically. Mitchell Starc was getting this thing to reverse like Wozniak in his heyday.
Yeah.
And these guys are saying, whatever you need to do to get the ball to reverse, go ahead.
Yeah.
And Buff Lehman has been known to be not exactly the most scrupulous of people out there.
And you're supposed to know what the ICC deems acceptable. It's like,
ideally, would be nice.
I don't know if it's right, I don't know if it's within the rules. Ask the people who make the rules. It's like, well, dude, you are competing at the highest level. You kind of should have checked that before you hit the
exactly,
field.
Exactly, God, but this is just it. So this guy gives his press conference last night, all of us asking these questions. Then people are asking him, did the Australians cheat? He was asked this question 3 times, and all 3 times he was saying, this is not within the spirit of the game. We're going to look into more. And they go, no, just admit it. Yes or no. Did they cheat? And he's like, well, we're all going to consider it. He did not commit to saying that. And then the guy who was running the conference got so annoyed because the question kept coming up. He said, no, he's answered that already. So some woman goes, no, but he hasn't answered that. And another guy just chimes in. So it got quite messy in that respect. So the Aussies have gone from being, we are going to root this out, we're going to make cricket clean again, whatever, and ultimately last night they just threw it all back, all the good favour, all the good PR that they managed to create by looking like they were going to come in there and crack the whip. Well, they haven't.
But it's got to be like clear, obvious, and like not even fall within the realm of that stupid excuse that creating your own sandpaper whilst in the game and using that on the ball is like, well, I've got to ask the ICC about that, mate. It's like, no, bro, I'm pretty sure you know that's not allowed.
Yeah, exactly. The common sense comes in here. So Lehman is going to be, he's going to be retained as the coach, and Australia are outraged by this because they don't like this guy at all. And he is. I mean, he's dodgy as all hell. Yesterday's podcast in the sport will just remind you of the things that he's so dodgy for.
It's wrong to evaluate a person purely on appearance, but he looks like a dickhead.
Oh. Yeah.
Well, he looks dickheadish.
Sometimes, yeah, sometimes they do go hand in hand. But as Michael Clarke said, who is the ex-Aussie captain, he said, too many reputations on the line for the full story not to come out. Cape Town change room is a very small place. So you've got guys like that who are saying things like that openly on Twitter. Today will be the verdict of what happens with Bancroft, Warner, and Smith. But they've all been sent home, and we'll find out today what the bans are actually going to be. These guys didn't have the balls to say it last night. They were too busy trying not to say the word cheat and to defend a guy who is, in my mind, undefendable. Buff Lehman, there's not a chance. After what I just played you there, this guy knows exactly what's going on. And if he didn't know what was going on, what was he walkie-talkieing down to Peter Handscomb to go tell Cameron Bancroft about? all the evidence is there. You've got to just join the dots, of which there's maybe two or three, and they're all in a straight line. This is like a Henry from Badar case.
Yeah.
It's so simple.
Let's assume like the excommunication and shame are the outcome, which is probably, you know, assuming everything we've come to understand thus far is true. That seems to be the logical and fair outcome. So let's assume that happens. What do you do? Do you go, okay, cool, well, I'm all right at like making burgers. Can you continue cricketing? What did Hansie Cronje do after he stopped being allowed to do cricket?
He died.
He didn't die the next day.
Wow, Ben, he died.
A couple of years later, really? He died. What do you do?
Yeah, that's a good question. What do you do?
This is why you should never cheat. But what these guys are doing is now... look, players are players. We all know players are just dumbasses who will just... They want to hit a ball. But Buff Lehman, you can't be a coach. You can't... What is he going to do? He's going to be pulling pints in Brisbane.
And, and people will recognize who he is and to be like, you look like a dickhead and you are one.
And then, the thing is there's a market for that.
Not tip him.
So that's all I've got for you on the cricket. I just think it's so funny how this team is melting down in the middle. You got bowlers who are saying, no, David Warner is the problem. We hate him. He basically is cancer. David Warner is not saying anything right now. And Buff Lehman, well, he's apparently squeaky clean. So you can work that out. That most of what I just said there is complete and utter horseshit. But, you know, the show must go on. So Friday, you'll see a much different Aussie side coming out. So you've got Renshaw, Burns, and Maxwell coming into the squad to replace the three players who've been sent home. I just hope it doesn't take away too much from the spectacle. I do still believe everyone should get onto the Wanderers. Nothing else. Just go cheer on the Proteas. These guys have had a great turnaround in the last few weeks, and they deserve all the support. There's also football. There was football last night.
Cry football.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a new sport.
Argentina got so absolutely Australian, they were beaten 6-1 by Spain.
Oh.
6-1.
Yeah, I mean, the Spanish are good, but they're not 6-1 over Argentina good, you wouldn't think.
No, Isco got a hat-trick. And Iceland, so it's obviously gone to their head how good they've become. They lost 3-1 at home to Peru. The Peruvians in Iceland, that's going to be a very interesting kind of facial expression where they hit the field. But they won, 3-1. Morocco beat Uzbekistan in the game that nobody was looking forward to. Nigeria lost to Serbia. Poland beat Korea Republic. Colombia drew with Australia. United States beat Paraguay. And Germany, well, they lost to Brazil.
Did they?
Yeah.
That was their first meeting since the famous 7-1 thumping fisting in the World Cup.
And then they found Jesus, and now they won 1-0. Jesus scored last night.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. That's pretty much it for the sport, guys. There was not a lot outside of the whole Australian debacle, which continues to be a debacle. And my Twitter feed's actually mostly frozen throughout the day. There was a parody song that went out, and I tweeted the video,
mm-hmm.
And this video's been seen 230,000 times.
That Triple J, we don't like cheating, we love it.
Yeah, it's like we Australians, we cheat, yeah. All that kind of stuff. This thing's been... Every time I go on my Twitter, my app is so slow. My notifications are, like, broken. Yeah. Yesterday, I trended in Mumbai. So yeah.
That's just a case of this getting in. Sorry, go ahead.
This is how it feels like to be Kim Kardashian, Ben, you know? And then they say she has no talent. You have to stomach and deal with slow notifications.
No, I was thinking the same thing. If you're a celebrity on Twitter, how do you actually deal with it? Because your phone just freezes.
There we go.
Well, I mean, depending on what level of celebrity you are, you have someone
whose
job...
Yes, please speak from yours, Gord.
I'm definitely not a celebrity. I'm kind of almost recognizable enough that it can be irritating. But there's no money in it. You're only a celebrity when people recognizing you when you're having dinner with your gran and wanting to come and have you down a drink because you were Captain Beer 10 years ago. If it doesn't make you money, it's not celebrity. But people who are proper celebrities...
Gord, I actually am playing you out.
You can't do that.
What?
Because my point, I didn't bring up that. See? I'm answering Sia's point about what real celebrities do, which is they have someone whose job it is to go through the thousands of bullshit and then, like, tell them when 4 tweets are worth, like, actually...
The fourth assistant does that.
Yeah. Okay. I should have kept playing you out. We must get to Said by Sia, because we need a bit of positivity. I was talking about Australians. But just a message here. Now that Bitcoin is below 8,000, do you think Run will do a runner? Very good question.
Uh-huh.
Also, fantastic wordplay. Over to you, Sia.
Well, this morning for Sid Bicier, who would have thought?
Your theme music.
No, you don't have to either. Were you trying to sing it? Do you want to sing Pharrell for me?
Yeah, it was going. It was just going to go badly.
No, yeah, it was. So let's just move past that. Don't worry.
Hurry on.
This morning, who would have ever thought that pizza could save the world, folks? It's a bit dramatic, but hear me out. A young student at UJ by the name of Ntato Malope started a Food for Fees initiative, and he's teamed up with a local restaurant to host a pizza party, which has now helped 4 culinary arts students raise funds to pay their tuition. So Ntato actually realized all of this and got inspiration to do this after he noted that in a recent study done among students at University of Johannesburg, approximately 40% of culinary arts students drop out because they just simply can't afford to pay their fees. So Ntato decided that rather he should take the sad statistic and pair it with the student's skills, which of course is cooking, and he thought that if the students could use food to pay for their tuition, most of their problems would be solved. See, pizza after all is saving lives. So the Food for Fees initiatives partnered with local restaurants and hosted a Pizza with Purpose party. It was an all-you-can-eat pizza evening that aimed to raise enough money to contribute to the tuition fees of students from UJ School of Tourism and Hospitality. And look at this, the night was a massive success. The pizza party generated more than 20,000 rand.
Fantastic.
So that goes towards 4 students' total fees. Now, the event took place last year, and so now they're actually in the process of setting up another one this coming Thursday. So, look, it's not a massive, massive thing. They aren't going out and saying we're going to help hundreds of students, but I always believe this is how you truly impact change. You go out and you aim to just do the little change you can, where you can, with what you have. So Ntato actually says that this initiative is a massive relief at the end of the day, especially considering that South African students have accumulated over 8 billion rand in student debt since NASFAS was founded back in 1999. So, my goodness, I just think this is what you have to do to make the change where you can. And hey, pizza's awesome.
Yeah, they've also found a way to complete the perfection of pizza by like adding good karma to it. So like there's a guilt factor to pizza no longer.
Bad carbs, good
it's
karma.
The right
that's
thing
pizza.
To do to eat pizza.
And that's your said by Sia for this morning.
But you're so right, Sia. It's these small things that everyone can do.
Mm.
And everyone's capable of doing this.
It's about changing your environment.
So true. So
there
true.
You go.
Right, well, you know, that's what C is here for, really, to balance the ship with positivity.
Oh, wow.
Hey, Gord, there's a message here from Vince for you, Gord. What do you think about Man United wanting to sell Paul Pogba over the summer? He has been playing shitty over the last couple of games anyway.
I don't want to risk Ben playing me out, so I think a great deal of it
well,
is...
Well, don't start like that. You said bugger all in 20 seconds.
I think a great... No, I've got to get value for every second, Ben, says Ben. I think a lot of it is sensationalism. I think whatever issue there is probably smaller than what the media are making it out to be. But that said, he's had a form problem. And a player that's not playing well by his own standard, getting an RC attitude about it is unprofessional. I would be surprised if it is this huge schism where he does leave in a huff at the end of the season. I would be surprised by it, but it's possible. But I think he just needs to pull up his socks and grow up a little bit. And again, I think it's all been blown out of proportion, but he is being played a bit out of position. I think he'd be happier if he was a little bit further forward.
I'll tell you what, it is going to be even worse, the fact that Sanchez is making that worse.
Yeah,
and Sanchez is a bigger problem, I believe.
Now, I also agree with you. I think Sanchez has been disappointing, but I think to call him a ginormous flop after 3 months is a little bit premature. Like if he's still sucking after, you know, 3 more months of play, because we don't have that left in the season, but if he's still sucking 3 months into next season, then I think we should start panicking about it. But the media just look for any angle to constantly publish potential. You know, those are articles that are like, is there a problem? Read this clickbait.
Well, yeah, gorgeous, of course, call entertainment, I agree.
Yeah.
Color says, morning guys, I've only recently started watching Mad Men and I'm thoroughly hooked. I feel like I've found one of those shows that I'm going to avoid watching the last episode as long as I can physically strain myself to. Mm-hmm. Have you watched it? Color. The great thing about Mad Men is that there's lots of it. There's like 8 seasons.
Yeah.
I mean, it's huge. And it's like, it's a slow pace. it puts you into a transient state where you feel okay. And like a lot happens, but all in good time. So yeah, go ahead. It'll be like a few years until you finish watching that show.
And it's kind of like it meanders through a more or less accurate timeline of actual advertising. So you get to sort of the historical value of it's pretty good as well.
It is indeed. Mavali Maloy, do you want to add anything before we go to a song by Bob Marley?
I did not like Mad Men at all, so I'm now the enemy.
No, that kind of makes sense because you're not a white male.
I'll take
Mad
that.
Mad Men was liked by white
people. No, guys, let's not beat around the bush yet. It was a misogynistic show of when men.
No. I just found it like incredibly boring. It has nothing to do with like a political stance, and it was just like a very slow. Boring storyline for me.
Yeah, because that's exactly what it was.
I don't think the show is aimed at misogynistic white men. I think it's about misogynistic white men in an era where that was the joy.
Yeah, but I just think out of the top 10 things that might engage Mabali in a TV show, misogynistic white men, probably not in her.
I think that's not profiling, high-ranking. And I think she might love it.
If she was to be screened by Netflix, I don't think she's ticking that box.
I also hate TV shows that have all female casts. I find them incredibly annoying.
I never understood why you got going to be like, one of them. No, you never got into Desperate Housewives.
No, I watched one season of that and then I was over it. It was very boring afterwards.
Yeah, I was like on the Spartacus point of there being so much nudity. I was like, it's the equivalent of Sex in the City or Desperate Housewives, just having everyone naked all the time while they talk about recipes. That level of gratuity, but I'm all for it if it's Desperate Housewives.
Yes.
I was going to say, that would be a better show for that premise.
Yeah.
Or State of Undress.
Yeah.
Okay, well, we're going to get to the second hour. We've got a lot more news stories for you. Plus, we've got the running order.
Ben, play yourself out. How about that?
I'm gonna make this running order my own today. And then Sia, tell us about our guest in the third hour.
In the third hour, we have a replay of an interview, and that is Richard Calland, who came in back in 2016. So he's an associate professor in public law, and he's an author as well. So yeah, guys, spoke to him about a bunch of different things, including the state of the nation and how he is edgy and political and so yeah.
Well, if the last 90 seconds doesn't make you want to listen further, then I just do not know. This is what Gordon listens to on the way to bed. Nice. So do I, actually. It's a good song.
Usually we together listen.
Yeah, exactly. Same earphones.
This is CliffCentral.com.